So I think the challenge is whether there's a fraction. So a fraction is a number A, a whole number A, divided by another whole number B. So that's what a fraction is. It's the ratio of two numbers. And the ancient Greeks were interested to know, actually not just the ancient Greeks, this goes right back to the Babylonians, whether there is a fraction which, when you square it, gives you the answer 2. So, you know, there are some numbers, like if I take the number 9, yeah, there's a number which I square it gives me 9. It's 3. Yeah. So we call that the square root. So they were interested in, well, what numbers have square roots that are fractions? They felt everything should have maybe, well, they thought all numbers were fractions. So ratios of two whole numbers. And the interesting thing is this came out of musical harmony, which is why I think there's something interesting going on here. Why did the ancient Greeks think everything was made out of ratios of whole numbers? Because Pythagoras, the story goes, was walking past a blacksmith and he heard the blacksmith hammering away at the anvils, and he heard a couple of the anvils just making this perfect harmony together. The two notes that they were emitting just sounded so beautiful to his ear, and he wondered what it was about the physics, the mathematics of these two anvils that was responsible for the beautiful sound. And so he went back, the story goes, and started experimenting with a string instrument. So the lovely thing about a string instrument is that you can make a sort of glissando, a continuous stream of notes. So he was interested, okay, but which of the notes do I feel that the combinations of these, you know, I've got access to continuously infinite number of notes, but certain combinations seem to be very pleasing to everyone, not just me. And he heard these notes out of the blacksmith, so he thought, well, okay, how do I replicate those? And what he found was that, well, if you play an open string and then half the length of the string, wow, that sounds beautiful. In fact, they almost sound like the same note. And this is what we call the octave. And the octave are two notes which are in a one-to-two relationship. Their frequency or wavelength are one's double the other. Pythagoras went on to explore more and discovered that if you take half the length of the string and then a third of the length of the string, that these two notes, which are in a two-to-three relationship, their wavelengths, create a really beautiful harmonic sound together. And we call it in music the perfect fifth. And these two notes were actually the ingredients to making the notes that we use in music. Pythagoras said, okay, well, let's call that a harmonic pair. And then he said, oh, okay, you've got one note and a note above it, which is higher. It's they sound harmonic together. Well, now let's take that higher note as the bass note for a new harmonic pair, which will be in this 2-to-3 relationship. And he kept on building more and more of these notes, perhaps taking it down an octave so he could actually hear them. And what he discovered is that, well, after you do this 12 times, something rather magical happens, because it sounds almost like you come back to the note you started with, which is a sort of, after all, now a combination of octaves. And so 12 of these perfect fifths, these 2-to-3 relationships, actually seem to be the same as several octaves, which is doubling the length of the note. And Pythagoras just thought this was magic, that the harmony that he was hearing had a mathematical basis to it and was made out of these ratios of whole numbers. And it led the Pythagoreans to this belief that maybe the whole universe is built out of these harmonies, that mathematics of whole numbers and ratios of whole numbers can make everything. And it's what coined the phrase the music of the spheres, that there was somehow a musical harmony at work, that the way the universe works is made out of these ratios of whole numbers. So here was the challenge. Here was an interesting number. A number which, when you square it, is 2. And the Pythagoreans thought, well, there should be a number which, when you square it, is 2. They'd already seen it as the length of a square of unit sides. Pythagoras' theorem implies that length is a number whose square is 2. So they set out on this task to find, well, what is the number which, when you square it, is equal to 2? So they thought, suppose there's a fraction. And which is the ratio of two whole numbers. So let's call those two whole numbers A. And B. We don't know what A and B are. We're trying to find out what they are. And so, yeah, we can think of that musically as actually two sort of those two whole numbers represented by two musical ideas. And those two musical ideas are our fraction. And in fact, we're going to layer them almost how we visually see a fraction. We have A divided by B. So we're going to have our number A represented by a musical motif, and we're going to stick underneath that number B, which is also represented by another musical motif. So we're interested whether the square of this number could be 2. That's how we're looking for a fraction, which when we square it is equal to 2. So we've got to explore the number a squared divided by b squared, and that's going to be equal to 2. So we need to musically represent a squared and b squared somehow. So what is a square? Well, a square, you know, if you think about a as a length of a line, and then you make a square by expanding this to a sort of two-dimensional structure. So maybe we're making chords now. So if, for example, if our little motif, A is represented by the notes A, B, C, then we want a square made out of this. So that's the line. So, well, if I was thinking of making like a little Sudoku puzzle out of the letters A, B, C, so then I could have sitting underneath that B, C, A, C, A, B. So that would actually be a sort of square structure made out of our original motif. So maybe actually to hear the square, you know, we're actually kind of making, what is the square of a tune? So that's the square of a tune. We kind of layered it so that three notes become three layers of three notes. So we're really hearing this the real rich structure that's made out of that. So we're supposing, well, this square of this fraction, a squared divided by b squared, is equal to the number 2. So now we need to find some way to express that equation musically. So we've got the equals sign, which when I write that mathematically is represented by two equal lines, one on top of the other. Actually, this was a really recent invention. It was first written down by a Welsh mathematician called Robert Record in 1557. And given that mathematics is 5,000 years old, that's quite a recent bit of notation. So we're going to represent that musically by two notes layered on top of each other of equal length. Now the number 2 we're going to represent by hearing two notes, one played after the other. And we'll make them an octave apart, which represents two notes whose frequencies are in a 1-2 relationship. So let's hear the equation, a squared divided by b squared equals 2. Now we're going to play with this equation. We're going to multiply both sides by b squared. So we're going to have a new equation, a squared equals 2 times b squared. So we'll represent this by hearing b squared twice. So in the second half of the equation, we heard something doubled, something even. But that implies that the first half of the equation, the a squared, must also be even. It must be double something. But if a squared is even, that can only happen if
A itself is even. So the implication of all of this is that A, at its heart, is something doubled. It's actually equal to 2 times some motif N. So we're going to try to complexify A and kind of double its structure. Now, we're going to substitute this new doubled structure back into the original equation. So we're going to square this motif made out of 6 notes. So that's going to be 6 layers of notes on top of each other, which, remember, when we square things, we're kind of permuting them around, making this kind of little musical Sudoku. So let's hear 2 times n all squared is equal to 2b squared. The next step is going to be to expand the first bit of that equation, because 2 times n all squared is the same as 4 times n squared. So now this first part of the equation, represented by the 6x6 Sudoku, is going to be pulled apart into something that we hear 4 times. Our equation now reads 4 times n squared is equal to 2 times b squared. But that means that b squared must be even, which in turn can only happen if b is even. So b is equal to 2 times another number, m. So just in the same way as we replaced our original motif A with a doubly complex motif, we can do the same thing with b. B is equal to a doubly complex riff. Now we're going to substitute this new motif back into the main equation. We need to square this new double motif, which represents B. So we're actually going to hear 4 times n squared is equal to 2 times b squared, which, remember, is actually 2 times 2m all squared. Ready? Finally, we're going to expand the second half of that equation. So this is going to become 4 times n squared is actually equal to 8 times m squared. So what's happening is that we keep on seeing more and more of these powers of 2 pulling out each time we make this move. The equation we've got now says that the first half of the equation, which are A, which became 2n, is actually now going to become a 4, well, another letter, K. And so we're going to see, this kind of implies that the thing is going to get more and more complex, more rich, both in depth and length. The process will just carry on to infinity. So we actually get a contradiction here. This can't happen because these were finite little tunes, little numbers. A and B were finite. You can't keep on pulling out powers of 2 because it implies that A and B must be infinite. They must be infinitely complex, and actually they're just meant to represent finite numbers. So what we've done actually implies that this can keep on going till infinity, which contradicts the fact that we started with 2 whole numbers. So let's hear the proof that the square root of 2 cannot be written as a fraction. This is proving that the square root of 2 is something called an irrational number, not a ratio of something. It doesn't mean that it's irrational in its behavior. It means it's not a ratio. So I've been giving you explanations of the implication of one equation and how it leads to another. And when I write this mathematically, I actually just use a symbol, which is a kind of equal sign with an arrow at the end. This means this implies that. And so to listen to the proof as a piece of music, so the proof sonified, we're going to represent that this implies that, this double line with an arrow, by a little musical motif made out of the harp. Mm-hmm.